Welcome to Take the Lead. The content you're about to hear is from one of our Boca Lead events. Boca Lead is a monthly business luncheon hosted at Boca Raton Community Church and taught by Pastor Bill Mitchell. Our desire is that the information you're about to hear will increase your leadership and also raise the bar of ethics and integrity within the business community. So take the handout, grab a pen, get ready to take some notes, and enjoy the video.
Good afternoon and welcome. We're glad you're here today. And who's here for the first time? I didn't get to see all the hands. Wow, I am so glad you're here. Welcome. Good to have you here today. And as John said, we at Boca Lead believe we live in the best community in South Florida, the best community in this country, and I believe one of the best communities in the entire world. And I have a goal of making this even a better place. And the people who come and join us every week and the people whose names you see on these tables that support this believe that as well. So come join our journey as we meet once a month and learn some leadership principles and meet other people who are like-minded, and then we work together, because Boca Raton has had a bad reputation over the years, and that reputation is turning. It is actually turning, and I love the fact that it is, because this is a great place to work, to play, to raise a family, to have faith, and all the other aspects of community. So what we do here is I do a talk about leadership, about influence. I believe that everyone has influence. Influence is leadership, which means all of us are leaders. Not every person in this room is in the corner office or in the top floor, but all of us lead from whatever chair we are in. And so today we're going to talk about that. And I'm actually going to talk about something I would normally talk in January on, but everybody in January is setting goals and doing things, and a lot of the personal side of leadership gets lost because you have all the corporate side of leadership to do in December and in January. So one of those is this, and let me ask it in the form of a question. Have you ever defined your future year, next year, and I know we're in the middle of a year, but have you ever used one word to define your year? Has anyone ever done that? Where you go, this is my word for the year. Raise your hand. Okay, which means 90% of you have not. Well, I want you to think about this for a few moments and discuss it around your table. If you had a word that either, one, describes your year or is an aspiration for your year. I won't tell you what mine is until the end because I don't want you all to say the same thing or something. So I want you to talk around your tables, get a little discussion going, and don't let one person do all the talking because it's one word. People will come back and go, I have four words. One word, do it for a moment, and we'll come back together again. This is more than just a fun exercise, but I hope it becomes a tool for you to think through and prioritize important things in your business as you move forward. And you can start today. You don't have to start and say, on January 1st, I'm going to do this. There's no time like the present to start. So I've entitled this topic, I've copied it off a book by Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last. This is a great book. Simon Sinek was with us in the Global Leadership Summit back in August, and many of you heard him when we had our summit, and he was fantastic. He wrote the book Start With Why. That's a great book to start with if you've never read a Simon Sinek book or get him on his TED Talks. This is a great book, and he gets down into the granular side of leadership. And so we're going to do some things today, and I'll tell you my two words. I had a word for the first half of the year and a word for the second half. So my word for the first half of the year was raise. Raise. I wanted to raise my sights. I wanted to raise the sights of our people here. I wanted to raise the sights of my children and kind of just raise. A pretty simple word in it. It was interesting. My daughter gave me a bracelet with the word raise on it. I don't wear bracelets, so it's sitting on my nightstand sitting there, but it was a great thing. My word for this last half of the year is proximity. I believe and have learned and learned more and more that As a leader, you got to be close to people. There's a proximate side to leadership. And I know we're globalizing, and it's interesting, Elizabeth and I are leaving for Lebanon this afternoon and working with our teams over there, 26 people that we support in projects all over the Middle East and North Africa, also coming in from Nepal, from India, from Sri Lanka, from Russia, and from Eastern Europe. And we're all converging in Beirut to spend a week together. And you go, couldn't you just send them money? Couldn't you just send them this book? And that's what Americans love to do. We love to send money and books. And so, and yes, we do send money, and yes, we send books and training, but every so often, you got to be proximate with people. And I have a commitment. We have 125 or so of these partners around in 40 countries. And John Lucas, who sits in the back, or me and our teams meet with every one of them every single year. We try our best. I get to about 70% of them. Why? Because we want to be proximate with people. If we're going to help people lead at whatever level, you got to be proximate. And that may mean just walking across the hall. You don't have to walk across continents, but walking across the hall. So leaders eat last. I want to give you three things today about culture, corporate culture, team culture, and then three things about leadership. They're all about leadership, but just to kind of help us. And those of you who know me know all I want you to do is take one thing out today. You don't have to take all six, the three and the three. If you only take out your word for the year, take that with you. It's not like you have to take everything I say. Take the one thing that applies, and I'm going to give you a tool at the end to work with your teams that will also be something you can take away. So, three things about culture. Number one, and you have a handout there that can help you, hopefully. So goes the leader, so goes the culture. That is a very basic, and again, I'm talking about corporate culture. It's also the culture of your family. It's the culture of your sports team that you coach. It's the culture of your nonprofit that you're a part of. So you could put it in any application. We're doing business. So goes the leader, so goes the culture. Let me give you the second one, and then I'll put them together. The second one is this. So goes the culture, so goes the team, or company, or firm, or whatever your organization is called. So goes the leader, so goes the culture. So goes the culture, so goes the team. Culture is important, and let me say that you are a part of making that culture. Again, if you are the leader of the team, you are really making it, but if you're a participant in the team, you are also making that culture. There are three types of culture at work. There's the toxic culture, there's the habitual culture, and there's the generative culture. You can use your own words here. We've all seen toxic people at work, haven't we? We've all seen toxic offices. We've all seen toxic teams. Why is that? Let me just say, if you work on a toxic team, if you've only been there a month, it's not your fault. The longer you stay and you allow that toxicity to continue, you have embraced it. I used to work, as Johnny said, I was in business for 25 years before I went into the nonprofit world and the ministry world. And I had a company where the president would ask me to go into offices, try to turn them around. So I was in one office and running it, and it was the most toxic thing I have ever seen. These people didn't know the truth. And they didn't know how to tell the truth. And I'm thinking, this is illegal. I mean, we're dealing with people's money. And it was the most unbelievable thing. They were making money. The bottom line was incredible. But the way they got to the bottom line, from the top line to the bottom line, was toxic. I mean, it was unbelievable. So I entered into it. And I'm pretty good at changing things. I'm good at this. This is what I do for a living. I help people change their lives. That's why you're in front of me, right? I love doing this. I couldn't do it. They were thieves and liars months into this thing. I'm not going to tell you who it was, where it was. You might know some of the people. But I have to tell you, I went back to the president and said, you can have your office back. He said, I'll increase your bonus. They're making money. I said, it's not about the money. I can't affect the culture. I am now a part of the culture, and I am now a part of the toxicity. Even though I personally am not, I am. How does this work? I need to give you an example. Elizabeth and I have a very close friend who just passed away, very young. He had leukemia. I remember the day he called me and said, Bill, this may be the last phone call we'll ever have. It was 4 years ago. It was unbelievable. Lifelong friends, his wife and he, and used to live in Boca and transferred out. So he was able to get a bone marrow transplant from his sister, who was the perfect match. Now, I'm not a doctor or in that field, but you doctors and medical people know that when the bone marrow, the person who it comes from goes into it, it's as if you now have their blood. So they call the test afterwards when they're testing the recipient a chimera report. Well, what is that? Chimera is out of Greek mythology. Chimera was an animal with a lion's head and a goat's head. One animal, two heads. And so they call this report chimera because if Scott, his DNA is from Dawn, his sister. He has the DNA, the blood. If he robs a bank and leaves his fingerprints smudged, the DNA will convict Dawn, not Scott. It's her DNA. And he talked about it, and we laughed a little about it and all, as he could laugh in his condition. But he said, if you swab my mouth, my saliva is my DNA. You have two DNA types in you. He had Dawn's DNA in his blood, and he had his DNA in his saliva. At work, you have two DNAs in you. You have the DNA of the culture, and you have your DNA. And as a leader, is your DNA transforming the business? Or is it causing toxicity? Or just coming to work as a habit? And you know what I think of that. I've told you before. If you don't like what you do, leave it. Or is it generative? Dawn's DNA saves Scott's life. Her blood is what you do, helping people to transform into being better workers and people, and if I can even say participants in the community of South Florida, or not. And that is the beauty of us as leaders transforming the culture of a company. And you and I have that ability to do that. Number three, integrity. I just need to say this, integrity matters. Integrity matters. There's two parts to this. Number one, it's not just about being honest when you agree with each other. So I do some work with you guys. You pay me, I do the work, we agree. There's an honest relationship. There's integrity attached to that. That's easy. I mean, anybody can do that. But integrity is also being honest when you disagree. Being honest when you disagree. It is so important. And then the last part of that is this. I would just love if everybody did this in this world. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Do you know what that means? Can you do this? Yes. And then months later, the contractor doesn't do it. Because they can't. They wanted the deposit. It's just unbelievable. If you can do it, say yes and do it. So yes, I can do it, and yes, I did it. If you can't do it, be honest enough to say, no, I can't. And or there's times when you're younger, you go, I can't do it, but I'll learn how to do it. I mean, there's in-between parts of that. But live with a life of integrity. This is where people fall the fastest and the farthest is in lack of integrity, where their yeses are not their yeses and their noes are not their noes. And you all know in your context what that means. And if I could just encourage you, Be a person of integrity in your business dealings. And be a person of integrity in your family dealings and in your faith dealings and in your nonprofit work dealings. This will be an incredible place when that happens. Now, let's go over to leadership. Three things about leadership, and all this is about leadership, but I'm just trying to take 6 points and bring them down to two sets of three. Number one about this, and this is huge, this word lead and this word manage, these are two very misunderstood words. I believe you lead people and you manage the numbers. You manage the projects. You manage the budget. You manage where some of the things are. People need to be led. Now, I know you might be called a manager. I have no problem with that because that's just a word in our corporate culture that we say manager. But to me, there's a big difference in how you treat people and how you treat the numbers, how you treat people and how you treat the project. And so remember this. It's huge that you are leading people. You are leading someone like yourself. How do you want to be led? Do you want to be managed? I don't know. You kind of manage cattle, don't you? You manage a farm. You manage a business, but you lead people. And every one of us can do that if we treat people with integrity and honesty and the other virtues that we talk about from time to time. Number two, this is huge. At the center of all your problems is you. Oh, wow, sorry. You had to pay $15 for that one? Ay, ay, ay. Oh, my. What did Pogo say in the comic strip? We have met the enemy, and it is us. We are our own worst enemy. It is so easy for me to point at you and you and you, because when I point at you, I'm not looking at my issues. Now, you have issues. I do agree. And if I'm leading you, I've got to deal with them. But I have issues as well. And we have to deal with them in such a way. There's a very minor president back in the 1800s. You probably don't even remember. His name was James Garfield. He was president for 4 months back in the late 1800s. I mean, you can't say anything about his presidency. He was probably the most brilliant of the presidents of all of them. I mean, when you read his stories, the last one that was born in a log cabin and how he became the president of a college and no parents and an incredible story. He gets shot by some anarchist. And when they shot him, the guy shot him, they caught him. The doctors were just learning about germ theory, right? We didn't know what Joseph Lister was doing really applied to everything. James Garfield died from the germs of the doctor, not from the bullet. If they had left the bullet alone and done nothing but sew him up, he would have lived. The bullet didn't kill him. It was the hands of the doctors who at that point in time didn't understand germ theory, or at least where they were up in the north of the United States at that time didn't understand it, and they're poking and prying and trying to get that little bullet out of there with dirty hands. That man died, the most brilliant president we will never know, because someone didn't wash their hands. Pretty simple. We've met the enemy, it's us. The anarchist didn't kill the president. His personal doctors killed him. You see, sometimes we're our own worst enemy, and we have to think through that. Now, third, we're kind of walking through this. Now, this is the one you're going to go, no, this doesn't make sense. The other one's kind of, I can say, friends matter. Now, this is what you're going to say. Oh, that's the good old boy group, right? No, 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 no. No. Here's a great quote. And think about this. Before I give you the quote, don't look at it. Think of a great thing you have done in work over the years. A great year, great whatever. Think about it. When you think about it, are you thinking about that you made the budget that year in a recession? Are you thinking about the people with whom you did it with? And I recall through my 35 years in business and nonprofit world, it's the people that have made it an incredible joy. Or it was the people that brought hell on earth. My biggest problems have been people. My greatest joys have been people. Friends matter. The quote is this: it is not the work we remember with fondness, but the camaraderie, how the group came together and did, and you can name whatever it is that you did. It is an amazing opportunity. The time, you know, there's a theory in leadership called the great man theory or the great woman theory, that there's one person that's going to do it all. Well, and we even have these misrepresentations with Jeff Bezos and Jobs and all these others, Gates and different people go, oh, well, they are the great man theory. You're right. But that's not, your company is not Amazon. It's not Microsoft. Your company needs a team to run it, and you need to work it. I don't believe a company's a family. A lot of people say we're a family. I don't think you're a family. You can't fire family members, and there are times when you need to fire people. So friends, not family. You're friends. Now, you may act like family and have those incredible times like we do here, but we're friends. Family's family, and work is work. Be friends about it. Now, let me give you a thought here. What can we take away from this? And I want to give you a tool, but I want to give you an example, the story about it. How many of you have ever used a Post-it note, right? Post-it notes. Now, here they are, low-tech, I'm sorry. Yeah, I do have all the high-tech stuff, and I'm a techie, but low-tech, a Post-it note. You know how that came about? There was a guy named Spencer who was at 3M up in Minnesota. He was an engineer. He was tasked with putting together a team that built an adhesive that could put metals together so you wouldn't have to rivet everything. You could put those metals together with a strong adhesive. And that is a strong adhesive to keep metals together in high pressure. And so he created this adhesive, and it failed. It totally failed. The metals kept slipping, nothing worked. So instead of throwing it out, they put it in the closet. Years later, a guy named Arthur Fry, who was a fellow engineer who knew of Spencer Silver's failure, was in church. He sang in the choir. I mean, a choir boy of all people. He sang in the choir, and his choir books, his notes kept slipping off the page. You know, turn to page such and such, you put a little marker there. Kept slipping because in choirs, you're on a diagonal. You're not on a desk, you're on a diagonal to sing, and they kept slipping out. He remembered Spencer and the failure of Spencer. He went over, took some of his bookmarks, and wiped them with a little brush and discovered they would stick, but not enough to pull the paper off. All of us have used glue, and then it pulls off, and the paper pulls with it, and whatever's underneath pulls with it. That's too strong. This stuck, but then you could pull it off. And the rest is history. It's one of the greatest inventions of the last 50 years. I can't even tell you how much money that 3M made in the 100 and some countries they were in. They couldn't even calculate it on Google. Every number was smaller than the next, and it's enormous that from one person's failure to another. And as I was reading it, I discovered that 80% of 3M's patents are done by multiple people. See, we think it's that one person just coming together. No, it's multiple people, and they have hundreds of patents a year that they do. Last year was 2,000 patents or more that they do with a Post-it note. Just, I failed, you take it and you can do something. Maybe you fail, I take it and do something. We need to work with people. As a manager, I would say Spencer was a failure at this project. And they went on and did other adhesives. But he worked for months on a failed project. You and I have the opportunity to help people. Now, can we use a post-it note to help people? Since it's kind of take the, this is fun. Now, I didn't bring enough post-it notes for everybody. Sorry. But I want you to take, when you go back, two post-it notes. I did this over with the Boca Resort people the other day. Take two post-it notes. Everybody take two, and you go to your person that you work with. They're either your boss, your colleague, or they work for you, your direct report. Take two post-it notes and give them two post-it notes. So that's four post-it notes. Can you do it? Two for you, two for them. On the first one that you have, you write down the three most important things that you do. Real easy. Write down the three most important things you do in this working relationship with that other person. Okay? And then you write down what you think is that person's three most important things they do within this working relationship. You see? I write down what I think my three most important are, and I also write down what I think that person's three most important things are. You're doing for yourself, you're doing for them. Then they do it as well. They write down what their three most important are and what they think your three most important are. It's amazing what happens. You give them your two, they give them their two, and the conversation is incredible. This week, as we were preparing to meet with your team over there, Becky, who's a part of our team and a direct report of me, she pulled out her post-it note from 2 years ago and said, let's look at it and let's talk through it again, because we hadn't done this in a while. We did it a couple, we do it every so often, and two of the three things had changed. Two of the three things she was responsible for, she's no longer, it's way down here. It's like 10th, 11th, 12th. But you know what? So many times we're doing things and expecting the other person to do things, and they're not doing them, and we're not doing them, and expectations are lost. It's such a simple thing to do, is to take two post-it notes, give them two, and to move it across. Try it. It really, and it's actually fun, because you can put down the computer and close it a little and just do something as simple as this. It'll go a long way. Now as we close, one last thing. Back to your word of the year. The word of the year. Why is this so important? I believe it infuses all that you do and helps you in a way that only you know. So I'm going to give you my word for my life. Can I do it? I have a word for my life. It's humility. Humility is my word. I actually have a ring. I don't have it on now because I didn't want to take it on the trip and lose it. But I have a ring that says humility on it in another language so that I can look at it and I can read it. Nobody else sees it. Humility. That's my word. There's a verse in the Bible that says that God has showed us what to do, to love justice, to do mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. That's my word of the day. That's my word of the week. That's my word of my life. Because I believe if I can be humble, I'll be a leader who eats last because I'm serving people and not being a leader who expects to be served. Now, I don't know what you need to put as your word, and you don't need a word of a lifetime. I mean, I'm kind of like anal at all this. I love this stuff. But next month, if I say, what's your word? Tell me, because it will define who you are. For that group that was so toxic, I asked them once. They had two words, get richer. Two of them said that to me. That was their total interest. If that's your total interest, you'll do whatever it takes down the pike to make it happen. And I think we can do better here in Boca Raton, don't you? Have a great day. Thank you.
We trust you enjoyed Pastor Bill's teaching. Our goal is that you take this content and apply it in your business and also your personal life. Visit VocaLead.com for all of our past material and register for our next business lunch. Have a great time and discussion, and take the lead.